when we're talking about using a device to find the location of a particular individual and where they might be using their cell phone, right? To me, it's about we are using some equipment, appropriately in my view, to find bad guys. I don't want to say too much about that because I don't want the bad guys to know, right, how we might be able to find them.
That was former FBI Director James Comey back in 2015 on how authorities use technology to access information from the general public's cell phones. And tracking location data is just one of a number of ways our cell phone data can be used by police. Catherine Crump, the director of the Samuelson Clinic for Law, Technology, and Public Policy at UC Berkeley, joins me now to explain. Catherine, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So most of us, I would say the majority of us, have a cell phone. What type of surveillance can happen on our personal cell phones by law enforcement?
So there's lots of different things law enforcement is interested in. Law enforcement is interested in the content of the phone, be it the pictures, the text, whatever is there. They can also get information from mobile carriers. There's a Supreme Court case just last month about what standard the law enforcement agent needs to meet when he or she wants to access historical location data about where phones have been in the past.
And tell us a little bit, you mentioned the Supreme Court decision. I'm assuming you're referring to Carpenter. Can you tell us a little bit more about that decision? And because it seemed to me like it was in some ways a win for privacy advocates, no?
So in the Carpenter decision, the Supreme Court held that at least when the government seeks 7 or more days worth of historical location information from a mobile phone company, the government needs to get a warrant based on probable cause, absent extraordinary circumstances such as an emergency. There's been an argument around since the 1970s and 60s that if you've already handed information over to a third party, such as your mobile carrier, you've forfeited any privacy right. And in this case, the Supreme Court said that wasn't true, that you can have a privacy interest in such records.
Right. And so let's talk a little bit about cell site simulators. There's been a lot of reporting on this in tech circles. What are they and how do they work?
So what they are is they're devices law enforcement agencies have that can mimic cell phone towers. And the reason you might want to do that is these devices can trick cell phones into registering their location with them rather than with the nearest cell phone tower. And these devices, colloquially known as stingrays after one of the early models, can act like a cell phone tower and basically force all of the cell phones in a particular location to register with them, which is useful to law enforcement agencies when they're trying to locate someone.
So essentially, could I be tracked without my knowledge?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's more likely than not. Surely the vast majority of people who've had their information picked up by a cell site simulator, stingray, haven't known about it.
Let's talk about hardware for a second, because as we're talking, I'm thinking back to when the federal government wanted to access the cell phone, specifically an iPhone of someone, one of the people who was involved in a mass shooting, and there was a tangle back and forth as to whether they were allowed to do that. Does it matter whether you have an iPhone or an Android or a different type of phone in terms of the ability for federal or state officials or law enforcement to access it? Can your hardware make the difference?
Yes, it absolutely can. So there's two issues. The first issue is what legal standard does the government need to meet to get a court order authorizing it to try to unlock your phone? And the Supreme Court has been clear that the government needs a warrant based on probable cause, decided that in a case called Riley a few years ago. But then there's the question of whether or not the government can actually do it. And certain phones these days are manufactured with encryption that can make it functionally impossible for the government to access the phone even if it has a warrant. It's actually better for all of us if we use strong encryption, because the cost of law enforcement, while serious, is outweighed by the benefits to all of our security by using these more secure encryption tools. And it often is the case that there's a gap between technically perfect security and what actually happens in practice, right? So with the case you were talking about earlier, the San Bernardino case, the government was ultimately able to buy a zero-day or an exploit, sort of access to a flaw in the system that enabled it to crack the phone despite the claim of strong encryption. And so I think all of us just need to do the best we can under present circumstances. And for things that are really sensitive, yeah, you just need to find an alternative to doing it digitally, as challenging as that is in today's world.
I think a lot of people are probably stunned that you made that comment. Catherine Crump is the director of the Samuelson Clinic for Law, Technology, and Public Policy at UC Berkeley. Catherine, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.